not our ordinary theme music for open air, I'll admit, but this being the day before Halloween 2014, I thought a little Gounod Funeral March of a Marionette would be appropriate to introduce today's show, as it does have a bit of a Halloween element. Later in the hour, we'll be hearing about the SF Renaissance Voices 10th anniversary season. They had their premiere on Friday night, October 31st, 2004. And among the works that they had, I'll be repeating one of the works by Thomas Louis de Vittoria on these concerts tomorrow night and Sunday. Also on this week's program, we'll hear from Ronit Widman-Levy of the Oshman Family Jewish Community Center in Palo Alto, who will share details about their upcoming entertainment lineup, which includes Grammy Award-winning trumpet player Arturo Sandoval. Plus, we'll hear about Joshua Kosman's classical picks ahead, and maybe, just maybe, he'll share with us his spookiest classical music piece ever. Plus, Diane Keogh gives us a bit of an update on things happening in the peninsula. Stay with us. That's the music of 10-time Grammy Award-winning jazz trumpeter Arturo Sandoval and his quintet. He will launch the Oshman Family JCC's Jazz Giants series, a series which also includes the great Ron Carter and his trio on December 4th. There's much more going on in addition to these amazing jazz artists. And here to talk about the program at the Oshman Family Jewish Community Center is Ronit Widman-Levy. Ronit is Director of Cultural Arts at the Oshman Family JCC for a couple of years now. Ronit has brought a wide array of talent to the center, bringing her training as a professional soprano, no doubt informing her creative choices. She's sung in opera houses around the world and has regularly performed with MTT in the San Francisco Symphony, with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, the New World Symphony, and with Boston Symphony Orchestra to critical acclaim, as well as a very acclaimed soloist in her own right. It's wonderful to have known her on stage. We just realized, Ronit, that we were performing together a couple years back doing a program of Mozart. Welcome to KLW.
Thank you. It's great being here.
Well, I'll have to admit that the Oshman Family Jewish Community Center is completely off my radar on a cultural front. First, tell us a little bit about the center itself.
The center is in the heart of Silicon Valley and there's a wonderful cultural center, which I'll talk about a little later. There's a preschool. There's an award-winning fitness center. We have really a beautiful campus, one of the biggest JCCs on the West Coast, or North America, I should say. Beautiful architecture, sculpture garden on site, and a multitude of activities, classes, and lately we've been attracting world-class talent, musicians, authors. Branford Marsalis launched our jazz season last year. We have Michael Chabon and Ayeld Waldman coming to speak.
We'll get to those in a minute. But what about the performance space itself? What kind of a concert hall or performance venue do you have there?
So I think one of the most special things about the OFJCC is the Schultz Cultural Hall. It's truly a boutique cultural hall. It's a smaller venue. It seats up to 400 people. And the encounters with the artists then are very intimate and provide an opportunity for the community to meet face to face with them and not sit in a huge hall where you might as well be watching it on TV. Some of these people usually perform in 1,000-seat halls at minimum, and being able to sit face-to-face with them and watch them play and talk to the audience, and there's a sweetness and an intimacy that's created that I'm so delighted to be able to offer to our audience.
And your description of the center sounds like it's a place we should linger about and enjoy some sculpture and just enjoy the architecture as well.
Absolutely. There's constant change, and we bring new sculptures all the time, and new events are being formed. And you should check us out, like us on Facebook, and get all the information on your feed.
All right, and we'll reinforce the website, paloaltojcc.org, as we continue to talk with Ranit Widman-Levy. Now, you've been involved in programming since 2012.
Right, at the JCC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this, just on the jazz front, this season is looking pretty amazing. Kicking things off tonight, in fact, is Arturo Sandoval and his quintet, one of the most dynamic performers of our time and acclaimed performers not only on jazz trumpet, but he's a renowned classical artist, composer, and pianist as well. Recipient of the 2013 Presidential Medal of Freedom.
How about that? That's pretty amazing.
And played with some of these amazing people like Dizzy Gillespie, Woody Herman, Woody Shaw, and even Celine Dion at the Grammys, where he was heard by millions of people. Amazing artist.
Yes.
So, and tell us how you chose Arturo to kick things off and how you got him.
I think, in general, I start from a place where I believe that our audience deserves the best. And I want to teach our community that at the JCC they can come in and see the best and consider us one of the main providers for culture and art on the peninsula. I think the decision to bring Arturo was first and foremost because of the quality of musicianship and performance. And he's a very prolific artist. I mean, you hear him play piano, it's as magnificent as hearing him play the trumpet.
It's
unbelievable. You're just in awe, and it takes your breath away.
And a real gentleman, too. It's just
he is a very sweet guy, and the story that he brings with him, you know, he had to fight for the freedom to create, to play, to, you know, give us something that was, you know, instilled in him to be given. It was not to be taken for granted, you know. He was born in Cuba and had to really make an effort to be here and to play for people. I've heard him before, and I thought it was spectacular, one of the most memorable jazz evenings I've ever attended. And I decided that we need to bring him to the community. And his agency is super sweet, and I called them up and described what we're trying to do, the whole concept of being a boutique cultural center, and they were on board right away. I think we've created kind of a track record of having great artists on our stage. And
well, let's talk a little bit about the non-jazz offerings. There's quite a bit going on for families and kids, too. Here.
Right. We have an amazing season for children, beginning with this November 16th. Pianist Frank Levy will be launching the season of musical journeys with Around the World in 88 Keys. and he'll be taking the children through a journey of lullabies and songs from all around the world. He's a master pianist and a very sweet personality. He chats with the kids and makes the music very accessible. There's something whimsical about his personality that shines through his playing and is very inviting for kids and their families. You know, we've had him in the past, not for a series, and it was sold out. And I think the audience was trying to tell us that they want more. And so we've created the series where he's going to play every couple of months, one time around the world in 88 Keys. The second time will be Animals and Seasons and other musical fantasies. And the third concert will do Our Favorite Things, you know, which is a pun, but nonetheless, a lot of kids hear music and they don't realize that they're listening to pieces that have been canonized. They attribute some of the pieces to commercials. Little do they know that these are canonized pieces by some of the world's greatest composers. Frank has a way of tying cartoons to classical music, things that are familiar to children. And it's very entertaining for the parents. You know, when I take my kids out to concerts, I want to make sure that I'm enjoying it with them and that it's not a compromise. Frank provides that kind of experience.
Right, right. Well, you've got another children's offering happening even before that. On November 9th, I've read about the Pop-Ups coming.
Yes, the Pop-Ups are rock and roll, a very groovy rock and roll band from New York. And they've been to our center before and wowed us with their performance. They're truly awesome, quality rock and roll. They write their own songs. I think they're now going to be on Yow Gabba Gabba on PBS. They're stars in the children's world. They're major. Uh-huh. And they have this new program called Appetite for Construction. They're super fun and active. They dance and sing with the kids. They throw these huge, colorful balloons into the audience and play with the kids. Kids come out singing their songs, and I know I've had requests at my home to play that CD over and over again. So I'm delighted, yeah.
That's on Sunday, November 9th. Again, more information at paloaltojcc.org if you're interested in the family aspect of things. Now, also authors and some serious discussions going on as part of your series.
Yes, on November 6th, we'll have an amazing event that I'm very proud that we're hosting. It's a talk that relates to Africa. Author Neville Frankel, who's a South African author, and he wrote this beautiful book that's a political drama that takes place during the apartheid regime. And we've coupled this talk and reading with the wonderful Pacific Boy Choir singing a tribute to Paul Simon's Graceland, Homeless, and some other songs, along with some traditional South African Zulu music, a real experience. We try to create events that touch upon social activism and human rights. We'll have Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wooden talking about A Path Appears on January 11th. And we'll put out a call for action into our community that has capacity to make a difference and is very well read and educated. And I think requires this caliber of speakers and authors. So
very nice. You touched on something that your international involvement in terms of bringing the attention of South African apartheid via this program. It's something that's very personal to you in your international work. With right. Tell us about the orchestra that you've formed that is an orchestra that's been traveling around the world.
Yeah, we have. I have a beautiful opportunity to perform with an ensemble. Actually, I didn't give it the name. It was named Middle Ground. And this ensemble is very unique because it's made of musicians that are from the Middle East, from countries that are at war, Syria, Palestine, Iran, Israel. And the beauty of the project is that even though we come from countries that are enemies for hundreds of years, we find a way to sit on stage together, make beautiful music that's connected by the beat of the nomads in the deserts that connect these countries, and inspire audiences for peace. We just performed at the Leaf Festival in North Carolina for 12,000 people. It was quite an experience. We sing some original pieces that we've put together for the ensemble. One of them, it's called Zaman El Salam, Time for Peace. And a lot of pieces that we each bring from our heritage and collaborate on. We've become true friends, and I feel very, very fortunate to be part of this project. This is, in essence, what we do. This really, is our second tour.
Really touches my heart just hearing about that. It's really, really something. I mean, more power to you for coordinating and being involved with that. So what else is happening for you on your singing front? Boy, you've sung with MTT a few times, the Tomaszewski Project.
Yes, that's been...
We've collaborated on Mozart and his letters and a small ensemble.
I have a couple of things coming up. I have a concert at Dinkelspiel Hall in Stanford that's all about love the night before Valentine's Day. And what else? Let's see. I'm kind of losing track of everything that I do musically.
I tend to do the same thing. Believe me, if this is Tuesday, I'm playing jazz. I don't know.
Yeah. So there's a couple of projects, and I'm sure people can find out online. I really want to focus on the OFJCC work because that's my main dish and my passion right now.
Terrific.
As promoting arts on the peninsula. We really have grown a lot in the past 2 years. You know, we're lucky enough to have Michael Chabon and Ayelet Waldman visit us as speakers. The lineup of speakers is growing. You know, we can tell you that we're looking into Wolf Blitzer and Maria Shriver and Ayan Ali Hirsi and some pretty amazing people who are very influential in the world right now. We'd like to bring them over and always tie it up with a call for action. I think we live in an environment where the capacity to make changes is great. And the JCC is very much aligned. Our mission is very much aligned with that.
Well, we're going to bring it full circle with you, Ranit Widman-Levy, the Director of Cultural Arts at the Oshman Family JCC, and go out with music of one other of a tremendous jazz artist that you're going to have on December 4th.
Yes, we're very lucky. We're going to have Ron Carter, the legendary royalty of jazz, play with his trio. This is truly a dream come true. He's going to be, you know, performing on a stage that's in the center of Silicon Valley and is such a gift to the community to be able to hear him. I don't know that a lot of our community members have heard him other than on recordings with Dizzy Gillespie and some other legendary people. So we're very excited about that and looking forward. You know, tonight is sold out. There might be a few tickets at the door. And I kind of predicted that there would be great enthusiasm to hear these giants. So if people are interested in Ron Carter, December 4th, I would say hurry up and get your ticket. We have some angry audience members calling us these days. You know, where are the tickets?
They're going quickly. All the information at paloaltojcc.org. Ranit, I wish you all the best. I'm sure we'll have you on to talk about some more cultural happenings down there or
always
collaborations between you and myself.
I'd thanks. Love that. Always love a that. Pleasure, David. Thank you.
So music of Ron Carter to go out with this segment of Open Air. Still to come, we'll be talking with Catherine McKee of SF Renaissance Voices. Joshua Cosman will be by to talk about his November classical picks for the month of November. And Diane Keogh's here with a book review and some cultural happenings down in the peninsula. Stay with us. Music of Ron Carter. Ron Carter and his trio appearing at the Oshman Family JCC Thursday, December 4th. Tickets are going fast. Check it out at the website for the Palo Alto the Oshman Center, which is paloaltojcc.org. Good afternoon once again. David Latulippe with you, now being joined by Diane Keogh, clearing her throat and trying to get a radio voice once again. Welcome back, Diane.
Thank you, David.
Well, it looks like our cultural paths have crossed a little bit down in the peninsula.
They did. I was so surprised to see you there. And there was at the 39 Steps at Hill Barn Theater.
A brilliant production.
Wasn't it? Did you laugh entirely for the whole evening?
It was amazing.
Yeah, I only just give a little bit of history about that. I don't know if you had known the history of it or not, but excuse me, that frog just loves being in my throat. It's first arrived on the scene, the 39 Steps arrived on the scene in 1915 as an adventure novel by John Buchan. In 35 in London, Hitchcock made a movie of it with Robert Donat and Madeline Carolyn. It was a serious mystery thriller. And another movie was made in 1959 and again in 1979, but not until 2005 did it show up as the uproariously funny show that it is today. And 39 Steps got a 2 Tony Awards.
Yeah, it's amazing. And this four-member cast, you have only got until Sunday to catch it. November 2nd is the last performance, hillbarntheater.org. We also attended The Tale of Sweeney Todd together, didn't we?
Yes.
Probably on different nights, but yeah. It was just an amazing production.
Oh, it was from the very first moment. I don't know if you felt the same way I did, but as soon as the chorus opened the play, I felt I knew I was in for a great evening with theater. It sounded good and it was good. Now, I'm going to give a little history about that, too. Originally, it was from France in 1825 and then in 1846, retitled The String of Pearls. It was a Penny Dreadful serialization, and in 1979, the show, as we know, opened on Broadway with Angela Lansbury and Len Carreyrou. Angela Lansbury can be seen in Murder, She Wrote every night on television, but Len Carreyrou is the grandfather in Blue Bloods, which is on every Friday night, which is kind of an interesting way for him to come from one thing to another. But anyway.
And again, just a couple of days to catch that, and believe me, you will really enjoy that production. Go to the Mountain View Center for the Performing Arts website, mvcpa.com, for some more information about that, the remaining performances, if you can get in.
It was so incredible. It really was. Mm. And now on to something entirely different.
Monty Python?
No, I'm not going to do Monty Python today. This is a book. It's called The Circle by Dave Eggers. Dave Eggers is founded McSweeney's here. It's an independent publishing house in San Francisco. It's called The Circle, and it was published by McSweeney's and Alfred Knopf in New York. I don't know why I picked it out of the library, which I did. It's 491 pages. It's a long, big book. Every single page draws you to the next page. It is so fascinating. If you can imagine The Circle is the name of the book, and The Circle is the name of the company that a young girl just wanted. She thought it would be her dream job to get a job there. And she got it. But the interesting thing, here's you have to imagine a campus where Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, all things healthcare, Monterey Bay Size Aquarium, banking, the likes of the San Francisco Zoo, and every inch covered by seen and unseen video cameras. It was a huge campus. The more you looked and read the book, the more you thought about what's going on in our world today, and it couldn't help having that creep in. Now imagine in all of this huge campus, all of the employees have a chip put into their bone, not into their skin, but into their bone so that it can't be retrieved, so that their every move is monitored. And it's all done for enlightenment and to make the world a safer, happier place, according to the people who run The Circle. At first, this girl, whose name May, was a little upset about the constant surveillance, but she came to understand the reasoning that the company gave her, and not only to understand it, but to revel in it. She saw it as a wonderful future. Well, then came portable cameras, really teeny little things that nobody could see, and they were called Change. For instance, politicians wore the cameras so that they would seem to be transparent, and pretty soon a lot of other people were wearing them, too. Some of the company's mottos were, all that happens must be known, secrets are lies, sharing is caring, and privacy is theft. It goes on for, as I said, 491 pages as we go with May through her ability to climb the ladder in this company, and she does it very well because she really drinks the Kool-Aid. Mm-hmm. And it's, you can't put it down. You just can't. And I never thought I'd be drawn to a book like this. It's contemporary. It's set here. There's a lot of things that we talk about that are local. It's fascinating and frightening at the same time.
It's The Circle by Dave Eggers, now at the library in hardback. And out in paperback now. You can catch the hardback at a library. Probably catch the paperback at a local bookstore, please, if you please.
Yes,
you've also been catching some art down at Stanford, I understand.
Oh, yeah. I went to see the Anderson Collection at Stanford. As Kenneth Baker noted in the Chronicle, the Stanford Art Trove is a global treasure of 20th and 21st pieces of art paintings, metal, wood, work, and ceramic. Just absolutely marvelous. When you come in, first of all, The building was built by Stanford to house this collection that belonged to one family. There are 121 pieces there on display. They will be rotated in and out because there are still another 700 pieces that the Andersons own. The Andersons started collecting this years and years ago. And there's a when you walk in, if you go there, and you really should, if you like any kind of art that's reasonably recent, you go find a wonderful desk with very kind people to show you where to go, what to do, and how to see it. There's also a room downstairs that has a continuing reel running. It has a seat so you can sit and watch it, of the Anderson family, how they started, what they were doing, how they traveled to Europe, who they listened to, the art lessons that they took. And I don't know how big their house is, but it must be immense. The pieces there are marvelous. The other thing on the main floor is the staircase. Now, if you can think of a Disney movie with the staircase, a grand staircase, it's wide at the bottom and tapers as it goes to the top. That's exactly what is there on that floor. And if you don't feel like climbing up that magnificent staircase, you can go take an elevator in the back, which is what I did. But the first thing you see when you look at the top and the staircase just makes your eye travel right up to it, is a piece hanging on the wall. It's Clifford Still's 1957 J, number one, an abstract painting. And it is unbelievable. And it's an artistic work, even just the staircase alone. The building, too, and the way it's constructed, the way it lets light in. Up on the second floor, there are 15,000 square feet of art hanging. The walls never meet each other, so there is all open space. It's wonderful to view everything up there. And there's a short list of artists that are there, and it includes names like Diebenkorn, Rothko, Stella, Pollock, Kelly, and Sultan. In fact, the Pollock painting is one that was hanging in the daughter's bedroom for years. And, you know, Pollock and his strewing of colors across an open canvas. Apparently, in all the years that she was there with her friends, they never made a mark with their markers on that painting, because they, even though it might not have been noticed, they decided never to touch that, and they didn't. And so today, we are completely and wonderfully absorbed in this kind of art. Stanford is doing such a great job on bringing art to the community and allowing it to happen. The museum is open 6 days a week. There is no charge to enter it. And as a suggestion, what I would do, because I had somebody here from out of town, I took them there, and I said, let's go have a little lunch. And we went next door to the Cantor and had a delightful lunch after viewing the things over in the Anderson collection. So it's right next to the Cantor in Stanford. And if you like any kind of art, if you are interested at all, go and see it. I've been twice, and I still see new things every time I go there, or I start to understand more of what the artist was explaining. It is a fascinating exhibit. We are so fortunate to be able to go and see it.
314 Lomita Drive on the Stanford campus. Here's another idea, Diane. Why don't you go down to hear the Peninsula Symphony's holiday concert on Friday the 21st of November or Sunday, November 23rd, and catch the museum, and then catch a program of Mendelssohn, Vaughan Williams, and some Tchaikovsky and Gustav Holst, but the Peninsula Symphony is doing it there.
And
annual holiday concert.
It'll be in the church.
Will indeed.
Are you going to be there?
I have to sit out this set, actually.
Oh, darn.
Just putting in a plug for PeninsulaSymphony.org.
But what a great afternoon that would be.
Yeah,
absolutely
indeed.
Terrific. Good idea, David.
Diane Keough, we look forward to your next dispatch from the Peninsula.
Okay, good to see you, David.
On Friday night, October 31st, 2004, Halloween night, the very first San Francisco Renaissance Voices concert was presented at 7th Avenue Presbyterian Church in San Francisco. Included on the program was the music you're hearing in the background, Thomas Louis de Victoria's hauntingly beautiful Officium Defunctorum, or Office of the Dead. It's going to be repeated 10 years to the date. That means tomorrow evening at 7th Avenue Presbyterian Church, on a program that also includes music by William Byrd, Josquin, Thomas Vilks, and Johannes Akagem. Here to talk about that program, which will also be repeated on Sunday at St. Mark's Episcopal Church in Berkeley, is Catherine McKee, SF Renaissance Voices' new music director, joining me in studio to talk about those concerts. Though Catherine is in her new role as artistic director, music director, she's been with the San Francisco Renaissance Voices since 2007. She has studied at the New England Conservatory, has directed choirs, community choruses, and opera school groups, taught stringed instruments, and conducted orchestras in Massachusetts, served as assistant conductor for the great Greg Smith Singers. Also on her resume, here in the Bay Area, she has served on the conducting faculty of the San Francisco's Boys Chorus. Currently, she's director of music at St. Bede's Episcopal Church in Menlo Park, with frequent engagements as a featured soloist in many of the Bay Area's prominent ensembles. A great pleasure to welcome Catherine McKee to our studios.
Thanks, Dave.
Boy, that's such beautiful music. Tell us why that was chosen. Was it just a coincidence that that concert 10 years ago was on a Halloween night?
The 7th Avenue performances, that is the concert series at 7th Avenue Presbyterian Church, had a last-minute cancellation. A group that was supposed to perform on Halloween night in 2004 backed out somewhat at the last minute. And in order to put an appropriate program on in their place, a group of singers who had sung together in various other choruses banded together to perform a one-time concert of Victoria's Officium Defunctorum and gave themselves the name San Francisco Renaissance Voices. The concert was a great success. They had a full house, and the group decided to try to continue on an ongoing basis to provide an opportunity for singers who enjoy singing Renaissance music. There's no other group in the Bay Area that does what we do as a dedicated mission. Certainly, there are ensembles that perform Renaissance music from time to time as part of a broader spectrum. The group that started the Renaissance Voices 10 years ago elected co-directors J. Jeff Badger and Sam Smith. They approached 7th Avenue Presbyterian Church about the possibility of establishing the Renaissance Voices as artists in residence at 7th Avenue, and the church readily agreed, and that's how the group got started. And they hired their first music director, Todd Jolly, the following year in 2005.
So tell us about this particular concert tomorrow and Sunday. How did you choose the is it all themed accordingly for Halloween?
Well, it's certainly all built around death, this time of the year when the veil is perceived as being very thin between the world we perceive and the worlds we don't. In many cultures, if not all, the decision to base our program around the Victoria was made before I took direction of the group, but it certainly seems appropriate, especially since by coincidence of the calendar, the 31st of October falls again on a Friday night. And what we've changed from the program 10 years ago, which was strictly the Victoria, which is about 45 minutes worth of music, is that we've included two additional pieces that are part of the Renaissance Voices past repertoire. William Byrd's Ye Sacred Muses, which is an elegy written on the death of his beloved friend and mentor Thomas Tallis, and Josquin's Nymphes de Bois, an elegy which he wrote for his bon père, his great father in music, Johannes Akagem. And to add, as we're looking forward to our next decade, a couple of new pieces, new to our group, not new music by any stretch of the imagination. Ockham's own elegy for Gilles Benchois, Mort à tu navré de ton dar, and Thomas
Wheel. That's a lovely lament, I believe.
It's right? Beautiful. The three it would have been written for all male singers. The two tenor and the bass parts sing the Miserere,
while the altos sing the text of the poem lamenting the death of O'Hagan. And then Thomas Wilkes's elegy for Thomas Morley, Death Hath Deprived Me. So we have two Englishmen and two Franco-Flemishmen to join our Spaniard for the program this weekend.
Wonderful. Those concerts, again, is on, let's see, we've got tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock?
At 7:30. We encourage audience to come early at 7. Our own Dr. Kaniz Mungi will give a short pre-concert talk on the music we will present. The talk will begin at 7, and the curtain is at 7:30, and will be followed by a rather festive birthday party-like reception. And in the modern spirit of Halloween, we encourage our audience members to come in costume. We have a little bit of the serious and a little bit of the sacred, and we feel that we have a great balance between the two. And then Sunday at 4 p.m. at St. Mark's Episcopal Church in Berkeley.
Information and tickets at sfrvoices.org. That's Catherine McKee, the SF Renaissance Voices music director and longtime singer with the group. Mm-hmm. Tell us just a little bit about what's coming up for the rest of the season. I noticed that you're doing a annual Festival of Lessons and Carols family concert mm-hmm. on December 20th. Now, that's something on KALW we get calls for every year. When are you broadcasting the Lessons and mm-hmm. Carols from Cambridge? Or that we do every year. So here's an opportunity for you to hear it live right here in San Francisco.
Live and in person. It's our community service program. There, no tickets or reservations are required. General seating. It's a very family-friendly event. The service started in England in the early part of the 20th century and has been adapted in all languages and cultures. I think it's not just an Anglican service anymore. It speaks to the desire to tell our story over and over, and that the story is told in small readings from the Bible and followed by music, some of which will be very familiar and great for singing along, and some which will be presented as a concert with members of the San Francisco Renaissance Voices. It's a great way to get close to the holiday, drop the shopping bags off at home, and come and enjoy a beautiful hour of music and telling of stories, and then a little Christmas cheer afterwards.
Very nice. And then the holiday spirit is still continuing into the new year with a Boar's Head and Midwinter Gala.
Yes. A former board member who's since moved away from the Bay Area, Nancy Cook Munn, mentioned in a meeting that she had great time with a church choir with which she'd worked doing Boar's Head Festival, a chance for people who are so busy during the weeks leading up to Christmas that they don't have much time to celebrate themselves, and rather take the opportunity during the 12 days after Christmas to have their Christmas fun. And we thought it would be a wonderful idea to bring the music of medieval and Renaissance England in particular. And we of course do invite herself, the Queen of England, will be there, portrayed by actress-singer Susan Gandunas. And we always have some special guests at our festivities. This year, world-renowned but San Francisco-born countertenor Brian Asawa will be joining us.
Oh, wonderful.
And we'll also have some visitors from the Court of Beijing. And you just never know who's going to pop up at one of our Boar's Head festivals. You do know there'll be feasting afterwards. It's our annual fundraiser, so there's a silent auction before the music begins. The mead and the cider and the wine and the little period-appropriate nibbles will be served, and it's a great, great evening. We'll be doing it twice on Saturday, the 4th of January at 7th Avenue Presbyterian Church, and on Sunday afternoon, the 5th, at St. Bede's in Menlo Park.
Once again, information at sfrvoices.org. Catherine, we're going to hear a little bit of the San Francisco Renaissance Voices singing music of Monteverdi to say mm-hmm. goodbye and welcome our next segment. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thanks, David.
San Francisco Renaissance Voices 10th anniversary season starts tomorrow evening at 7:30. 7th Avenue Presbyterian Church, repeated Sunday at St. Mark's Episcopal in Berkeley. Still to come this hour, Joshua Cosman will be by to share his classical picks for the month of November, and who knows, maybe his choice for the scariest piece of classical music ever. Well, I know which one mine is. It's from a dear composer to my heart, one of the first pieces that I've ever explored as a young person in suburban Connecticut, listening with headphones on in a darkened bedroom, Night on Bald Mountain, A Witch's Sabbath, from Modest Mussorgsky. Stay with us for Joshua Cosman next on Open Air. Night on Bald Mountain, a little bit of an excerpt, Modest Mussorgsky, one of my favorite spooky picks for this October 30th edition of Open Air, preparing us for the day tomorrow. David Latulippe here now with Joshua Cosman, who's going to share his little pick for spooky music before this hour is up. But it's close to the beginning of the new month, which is when we normally have Joshua on. Close enough because it starts on Saturday. We thought we'd have you on this week to share with us what's happening in this coming month.
Thanks, David. Thanks. Glad to be here. Lots of stuff going on in November. It's always the heavy month in the fall, October and November. And one of the biggest ones that I want to make sure to get a plug in for right at the top of this segment is the Rubin Institute for Music Criticism, which is coming to San Francisco next week, November 5th through 10th at the San Francisco Conservatory. This is a program designed to publicize and excite discussion and conversation and thought about the role of music criticism in our cultural life in all its manifestations. This is a program that was started a couple years ago at the Oberlin Conservatory of Music, and then David Stoll, who was the head of that school and now is the head of the San Francisco Conservatory, sort of imported it from Ohio, brought it along with him in his satchel. So there's going to be a lot of activities that are surrounding this, many of them public, some of them not. There's going to be a large passel of some of big-name music critics from around the country. Now,
Tony Tomasino giving the keynote. That's fantastic.
That's right. Tomasini of the New York Times will be the keynote address. We'll give the keynote address. Alex Ross from the New Yorker, Anne Majet from the Washington Post, John Rockwell, formerly of the New York Times, and before that, for those of us with really long memories, from the Oakland Tribune. Tim Page, the Pulitzer Prize-winning music critic, formerly of the Washington Post, who now teaches in the journalism program at USC, and Heidi Whaleson of the Wall Street Journal.
With a lineup like that, I don't know if I'd be frightened or elated as a performer going to a panel.
Well, I hasten to add, none of those folks are going to actually be writing reviews of the events around this. I'm going to be, but they're not. They're going to be giving public talks. They're going to be sitting on public panels and discussions. And they're also going to be doing private coaching with a group of young, aspirant music critics from various schools around the country.
It's interesting as a critic that you emphasize the ass.
It comes naturally. Yes, it does. These are students from Oberlin, from Yale School of Music, and from three schools locally, Stanford, Cal, and the Conservatory. And they're all going to be having sort of training sessions with these big guys and then competing for a $10,000 prize.
$10,000.
Yeah, you're not eligible for it, and I'm not either.
You wrote $1,000 on my
Well, I'm getting to, no, I'm oh, getting okay. to that. That's
right.
A different prize.
Different prize.
All Many
right.
prizes. Prizes for everyone. Those are the prizes for the young students. But this is where we come to the part that's for the general public and anyone listening here. Go to one of these concerts. I'll tell you in a minute. And on the website for the Rubin Institute, there will be a link to submit your own review, 400 words, and those prizes, those reviews by members of the general public are eligible for a $1,000 prize called the Everyone's a Critic Prize, the thinking being that indeed writing music criticism is so easy, anyone could do it, which is actually something I believe very strongly. And this is designed to acknowledge those people who do. So these are the events that are going to be coming under the aegis of this institute. First, the San Francisco Symphony on Thursday, November 6th. That's a week from tonight. MTT is going to conduct with Gil Shaham as the violin soloist. It's a program of Liszt, Mozart, and Ravel. Then the next night, Friday the 7th, the Philharmonia Baroque Orchestra with Nicholas McGeegan conducting and Andreas Scholl, the great countertenor, as soloist. Saturday, November 8th, the last performance of this wonderful Tosca that's now running at San Francisco Opera, about which I've already had my say very enthusiastically, too. And finally, on Sunday afternoon, November 9th, at Cal Performances, the Czech Philharmonic will be performing Dvorak's Stabat Mater. So that's the four concerts that everybody in the connection with the Institute will be attending, and the students will be writing about, and we encourage everyone in the public to go to those one of those concerts, write a review, file it. There'll be a panel of critics that I'm on with, along with my former colleagues at The Chronicle, Stephen Wynn and Robert Commande, and also Wynn Delacoma, formerly of the Chicago Sun-Times. We're going to huddle, we're going to look them over, and we're going to give $1,000 to whoever can write the best 400-word review in a very tight under a very tight deadline.
That's interesting. Oh, yeah. That's got to be part of the equation, doesn't it?
9 a.m. deadline the following morning.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Neat. Shout out to Bob Commande, who's since become a good friend. Bob's part of that panel. Information at that. Wonderful. Everyone's a critic, as well as the performances that are involved at the conservatory's website, sfcm.edu, and then /Rubin Institute.
So that's a big one. But then there's other things that are going to be happening all month that aren't under that umbrella. One of the ones that I'm most excited about is on November 14th and 15th at Cal Performances, we're going to see a performance of Benjamin Britten's Curlew River, a wonderful theatrical piece that was based on a Japanese no play that he saw in the 50s in the course of his travels throughout Asia, came back and took that play and did a new version of it set in a medieval Christian context. This is the first of his three sort of short theatrical pieces called Church Parables. And it's very spare, it's very haunting. It's about a woman whose son has been snatched away from her by pirates. Pirates, maybe not the right word. You know, child slavers, probably. She sent him down to the river and he never came back. And she's spent the last 20 years seeking him everywhere and becoming increasingly unhinged. This is the character. It's called the Mad Woman and generally sung by a man. In this case, it will be the tenor Ian Bostridge.
Wow, neat.
This is a production that comes to us from the Barbican Center in London, directed by Nettia Jones, where it got all kinds of acclaim and applaud. So we're looking forward to that. And Bay Area folks with a long memory may remember that in the 90s, the men's chorus Chanticleer did a stunning production of this same piece that still lingers in the memories of some of us. Anyway, that's the 14th and 15th at Cal Performances. Information is at calperformances.org. Also, it's a big month for Cal Performances, actually. Just before that, on the 13th, Thursday the 13th, they're going to be bringing in Apollo's Fire, which is this wonderful early music group from Cleveland, led by Jeanette Sorel, and they're going to be doing a performance of Monteverdi's Vespers of 1610, which is one of the landmarks of the Baroque liturgical repertoire. It's a huge compilation of psalms and instrumental music and choral music and chant, and basically an overview of the state of music in all its vicissitudes from around the period of the beginning of the 17th century.
What's not to love about the music of Monteverdi and his Vespers? Let's have a little excerpt of his Vespers and then more with Joshua Cosman.
Yeah, this is the Laudate Puri Dominum from the Monteverdi Vespers of 1610. This is a performance by the 16, led by conductor Harry Christophers.
And then more with Joshua Cosman and his picks for November and his scary pick for October. Touch of Monteverdi, which you can hear via the auspices of Cal Performances, calperformances.org, on November 13th, Apollo's Fire. Nice stuff.
And I want to get in one more plug for another event at Cal Performances, because this is a project that's going to be running all season long, and I'm going to probably plug it every chance I get. This is called Project 1014. This is a collaboration, very exciting, between Cal Performances and the San Francisco Contemporary Music Players. They're going to do four concerts across the year, involving commissioned world premieres from 10 different composers. It's four concerts, all devoted to new pieces. And the first one this month, on November 16th, is going to feature a lot of music by George Crumb, still going strong in, must be his 80s. I forgot to look that up. Gabriela Ortiz, Elena Ruhr, and Georges Apergis. That'll be on Sunday, November 16th at Hertz Hall in Berkeley. Stephen Schick, the dynamic music director of the group, will conduct all those pieces.
Another home run for Cal Performances, calperformances.org. It's a triple play.
It is.
At least on your list.
Exactly.
So, some great opera coming up, too, this month.
Yes. One of them that we already mentioned is Tosca. You get one more chance to see that on November 8th. Even if you're not reviewing for the Rubin Institute, you should go and hear the Liana Hartounian, who's knocking them dead in the title role, and also Brian Jade as Kavara Dossi. But then the next day, Sunday afternoon, November 9th, we have Cenerentola by Rossini, which the opera is billing as Cinderella on the theory that nobody wants foreign titles. And we're going to have Karine Desay, a new French mezzo-soprano about whom we know very little. She's going to make her company debut in the title role. Actually, a lot of company debuts in that cast. Rene Barbera, the tenor, as Don Ramiro, and baritone Carlos Chausson as Don Magnifico, the evil father or stepfather, however.
Just amazing, ebullient music from Rossini for Cenerentola. And then Bohème's coming up quick.
Bohème is coming up in two casts because that always sells. And we've got some great singers coming. Michael Fabiano, the tenor, who's become a big star now, is going to sing in the first cast with the soprano Alexia Vulgaridou, and then alternating with Lea Crocetto out of the Adler Fellowship, whom we know, and the tenor Giorgio Beruggi.
SFOpera.com for all information regarding the San Francisco Opera. Thanks, Joshua, for sharing
your
picks.
Thank you for having me.
You got one more pick to share with us, and your spooky pick.
You know, I am always spooked by the last movement of Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique. You know, this is a piece about a guy chasing a woman through hill and dale, over dale and through the dance hall, and every place he finds her, she's got this tune that is associated with her. And in the last movement, he follows her to hell and imagines that sees her participating in a witch's Sabbath.
And we even hear the incorporated dies irae into that.
As always.
Here is music of Hector Berlioz as we say goodbye to Joshua Cosman for the month of November coming up. Thanks for your picks again.
Thank you for having me, David.
Symphonie Fantastique, the Dies Irae, and the Witch's Sabbath. Witch's Sabbath, also my pick for the Mussorgsky Night on Bald Mountain. What do you know? My thanks to Neil Swinkles for helping things happen here on Open Air. A reminder that if you've got a program suggestion, you can email me, david@kalw.org. I'll actually be performing the Symphonie Fantastique this Sunday afternoon. Wonderful piece of music. In any case, Open Air can be heard anytime you'd like at our website, kalw.org. All of our programs are archived there. I'm David Lotti. Thank you once again for listening to Open Air on this local public radio station, KLW San Francisco. BBC News is next.